Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you.
Wendy, you and I have been talking quite a bit about the recent ITV drama about the post office scandal. Both of us have been scandalized by it. And I know you wanted to share some of your thoughts about those cases and about a relationship that you see between the post office saga and your recent saga with council tax and HMO. Perhaps you could share those thoughts with us.
Yeah, definitely. I feel incensed about the injustice of both of these situations. And while for many people the post office scandal is seemingly of much larger proportions, I think when we consider that there are probably over 500,000 HMOs in this country, and if we can assume that maybe 5 or 6 people are living in them, then that is effective of that's affecting 3 million tenants potentially. And you've obviously got all the other outflows of that, the landlords, their families, various different people who are affected who are in that sort of wider circle. So this could also affect millions of people, the HMO and council tax scandal, as we could name it from this point forward. And I do think there are massive similarities between the two. I think the first one is that people often feel that they're alone. In the post office story, what we've heard about from the very beginning when this started to come to light was that the Horizon system that had been installed in local post offices was not working properly. It had bugs in it. It wasn't fit for purpose. It was being adjusted centrally, and people's records were not tallying with their own paper-based records, which previously that's what they'd used. And they thought it was them who were in the wrong. Those sub-postmasters and mistresses blamed themselves. They took it responsibly. They felt that it was their fault. Now, I think with council tax, I don't think that landlords have thought, oh, this is my fault, but I think they have definitely felt alone. I think they felt like they've got nobody to turn to for advice. Anybody they do ask doesn't seem to know or understand the system or the process, and they felt very, very alone. And we know of many cases of landlords and tenants who have felt suicidal. In fact, we have evidence of a handful of landlords who have taken their life as a result of their properties being rebranded, where suddenly they went from being a fairly profitable business to suddenly losing half their income because of having to pay council tax and not being able to navigate the system. So they didn't understand what they should do to challenge it. They didn't know that they could pass the council tax onto the tenants. And they didn't understand what the implications of this practice were. So I think that's the first really key similarity. And to me, this is why it is so unjust, because people haven't had access to information or help to realise that they're not the only one. The second, I think, similarity is that, of course, the process for challenge is very confusing, long-winded, and has a number of steps to get through. And for many people who are running an HMO business, they simply don't have the time or the energy to be able to learn and navigate the process of appealing to the VOA, of putting in a proposal, first of all, then deciding that the VOA has rejected their proposal. So then having to go to appeal and realizing that it's actually the valuation tribunal that runs the appeal, not the VOA, and then having to negotiate and communicate with the VTE rather than VOA. It's very, very long-winded, very confusing, and different people are told different things. So you may have two HMO landlords talking to each other about it, and they both have very, very different experiences, because for some people they sort of jump through all the hoops and other people seem to almost leapfrog over some of those hoops. So people seem to have different experiences of navigating the process. The third thing is everybody's case is individual. There are no two HMOs that are identical. Well, there may be some that are very, very, very similar. You may get twins. You may get HMO twins. And you may even get HMO triplets. But generally, every HMO is very individual. It has its own DNA. It has its own mark. It might be that the one of the en-suites is slightly different from even its twin sister next door. But every property in the UK has its own individuality one way or another, which means that every case is individual. It means that every single person has to take their individual property and appeal. And that, of course, also makes every case unique, but difficult then to draw conclusions from. Because in one person's case or one person's situation, it might be down to a date where the change was made that means that the VTE uphold the proposal. In another case, the HMO layout may be identical, but the date of disaggregation was further down the line, and therefore the appeal is dismissed because, according to the VTE, the VOA have made the right decision to disaggregate at that point in time. So little differences can alter the outcome of an appeal. And again, this makes it very hard for individual landlords to be able to predict what their case will achieve by going to an appeal. So I think these are some of the basics. I could go on.
Well, thank you for sharing those initial thoughts, Wendy. As I was listening to you talk about the scandal, the mini scandal that's gone on with HMO rooms being banded for council tax, and of course you've been successful in making sure that the government says, no, that's not to happen again. Of course, we know that even so, there are councils in some corners of our great land that are deciding to even ignore this edict from central government and plough ahead still in the way that they were doing so before. So that's interesting in itself. But as I was listening to you, I was thinking another link between the post office situation and the council tax rebanding of HMO rooms is complexity. In the case of the post office situation, something that seemed relatively simple before when it was paper-based and you had every sub-postmaster doing their own accounts and no doubt submitting them up to the main post office, suddenly a new horizon electronic system was foisted on them with a barrel load of complexity underneath the surface. In the case of HMO room banding, there's a huge amount of complex law behind this. Do you see that link piece between the complexities of the two situations? Do you think that that happens by accident? Does the law of our land become more and more complex to navigate, and the law of our systems become complex by accident, by design, or by some other power? Because I think that's a real key here is that obviously the more complex things are, the more it's stacked against the citizen with low resources.
I do think that that is a key part of how the system operates against the individual. And I think if we go back to, I think it was 2017, may have been 2018, the High Court decided that the listings officers from the VOA had ultimate discretion. Now, what this meant was that it's very, very difficult, therefore, to challenge the view of a listings officer in the High Court because their view is final. And also, another outflow of about the same time was that in order to challenge an HMO that had been disaggregated, you had to challenge room by room rather than as a whole property. So no longer could you go to the VTE and challenge you know, number 15 Acacia Drive.
What's the VTE, Wendy?
That's the Valuation Tribunal for England. So those are the people who run the tribunals, the actual appeals. And again, your question shows to me that it's complicated and complex. And the tribunal now, if you send an appeal forward to a tribunal and you put the whole property address as your appeal address, they will reject it. Why? Because they say, no, you have to appeal room by room. Because effectively, now that we have disaggregated this property, each of those rooms, in our view, is a dwelling. And the rules are that you have to appeal per dwelling. So what was previously one whole property, we've now salami sliced up, and we now want you to appeal salami slice by salami slice. Many people don't know this. So again, they get completely lost in the system. And it's so complex, without legal help and advice, which can be very costly, they just give up and accept it.
But you haven't really said whether you think that's happened by design or by accident. How has this come about, Wendy?
Well, I think there are wider questions about the overall legal system of the UK and the process for changing the law or challenging the law. One of the inherent problems we have is that the VTE is a very sort of archaic system. Even on the panels, there are volunteers who don't have legal training. They have some understanding of the way council tax is run or supposed to be run. But I suspect that many of them don't have the knowledge of some of these cases to really be able to interrogate the data properly, to ask the right kind of questions. And of course, the VOA has their business is listing properties and understanding case law. And so they can focus or highlight on a particular case very adeptly at a tribunal. And I would almost argue that they could pull the wool over the eyes of the VTE panel in their argumentation of why an HMO should remain disaggregated. And usually they use the four tests of rateable occupation. Now, to the ordinary person who has decided to invest in HMOs for a pension, for a legacy, because they want to make a change to the housing market, because they see an opportunity, none of their training courses, none of their YouTube videos that they've watched, none of the books that they've ever read probably even mention this. In fact, they'd have to go to the council tax manual written by our dear friend Alan Murdy to really understand what this actually means for them. And therefore, this system has developed from, it's such a niche, small part of UK law and practice. And we have to also remember that this only goes back to 1992, when council tax was introduced, which really is not a long time ago in the grand scheme of things. Prior to that, we had the rating system, and that had been around for 300 years. So there was a lot more depth, knowledge and understanding of that particular system than council tax. And I think, therefore, when you have a new system and a new process and you start to introduce changes rapidly, it, of course, is going to make it difficult for people to navigate. And therefore, the legal complexities alone become monumental and really become impossible for people to figure out and to navigate.
Yes, I see your point of view there, Wendy. It seems to be that our government system, our judicial system, is becoming less and less caring about the average citizen on the street. You know, we can see that in the case of the post office scandal. Obviously, you just explained it as regards the HMO situation. Do you think our government is now starting to set itself against the citizen? Do you think there's a way back from this? How do you see that government versus citizen relationship starting to, well, as we go forward into 2024?
Well, I'm not sure that the government really knows the extent of the state, actually. I think the problem is that we've had so much state creep that I don't think MPs, probably many of them, have even heard of the VOA, frankly. I think they don't really understand the extent to the of the work that the HMRC does. I don't think they probably understand the role that many councils have. The we have such a large state now that its tentacles reach into every aspect of our lives. And the risk of that, of course, is therefore that our MPs simply can't grasp the enormity of the size of the problem or to understand in depth those individual strands at such a level to be able to challenge what happens. So I would almost say that MPs are so at arm's length from some of the issues that we face as ordinary mere mortals in the country that I don't think they are deaf to our cries. Certainly in our campaign, we contacted a lot of MPs and we had a lot of actually very positive and sympathetic responses. However, many of them simply acted ironically, as postmasters or mistresses passing on the mail. They would receive a letter from a complainant, you know, one of their constituents whose HMO has been rebranded, who'd written a long letter to them to explain what their situation was. The MP then takes that letter, they forward it to perhaps the head of the VOA. The head of the VOA then passes it on to one of their researchers or minions, who then has a rebuttal letter and explains the process and the policies. That letter then goes back to the MP. The MP then forwards that letter to the constituent. So they act as a sub-postmaster in what they're doing. They're passing mail from pillar to post, but not really getting involved, not really understanding the depth and the complexities of the situation, and not really bothering to engage with the topic at hand. And that was one of the reasons why when our amendment first went into the Commons and was proposed by Caroline Dienage in 2021, that we didn't really get much traction initially, because it meant, 2022 it was, the end of 2022, because lots of people, again, could not grasp the complexities of this. And even some of the senior MPs that we spoke to, some of them who are or have been on the cabinet, in the cabinet, they struggled also to understand some of the complexities of the nature of how HMOs are disaggregated, rebanded, rateable occupation is applied, etc.
This is all, of course, a result of the scramble of the government in 1992 to move on from the poll tax community charge problems that it faced. And there was then seemingly a rush to do something new. And then we get the council tax, which seems to me a very ill-defined and probably quite poor piece of legislation right now. Once again, not very well understood, would you say?
I think that's true. It wasn't perhaps thought out as deeply and scrutinised as well as it needed to have been. It was passed very, very quickly. And it was this sort of mungified bit of a mess of it kind of took some bits from the rating system and it took some ideas from the poll tax and it kind of became this property tax. But, you know, it had an element of personal liability about it as well. And then as it rolled forward, other bits and pieces have been sort of added into it. There have been extra amendments. You know, if you look at the regulations, the 1992 regulations, you see there's lots of amendments that have been passed since then, because obviously there have been issues with the application of the original legal framework.
Well, it also hasn't raised enough money, of course. And of course, since that time, this is supposed to be really more a property-based tax. Well, I suppose property and for personal liability. But of course, then we saw the ability for the government to charge landlords for vacant properties, which shows that the original legislation has already begun to be distorted beyond measure.
Yes, I think that's true. But what I want to do is to bring this back to how this relates to the post office scandal.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I think that when we think about this misapplication, this and the result of the misapplication, I think we can align, you know, a similarity with the post office in that they had this horizon system and that nobody was taking responsibility for clearly some of the bugs and the errors that were going on. And people felt disempowered to be able to challenge the system. And I think that for me is the bigger, wider point here, whether it's council tax, whether it's the horizon system. And there are many, many other miscarriages of justice that we are aware of in our society. Blood transfusions, even the thalidomide scandal. These are all issues that have affected ordinary people's lives. And yet we don't have a very good way of the ordinary citizen from being able to not only challenge, but also have advocacy. Have somebody who can legally advocate on their behalf without it becoming an extremely expensive exercise. And I think for me, what I feel about it is that the access to the law has become impossible for the ordinary person who doesn't have any knowledge about how our legal system works to access. Unless they have lots and lots of money. And that's simply not right. Even we've heard of people who've gone to the Citizens Advice Bureau or they have tried to speak to somebody at their local council. Even these people just do not understand this ceiling, this invisible ceiling that has been placed above them. That means that they are never going to be able to answer questions that are put to them from higher authorities who are in power and in knowledge.
Well, it almost seems that there isn't the justice system as you would perhaps expect it to be in England. You know, we're the home of justice, and yet we spread it throughout the world. We're renowned for this, as opposed to perhaps some Middle East or Far Eastern states where they're not renowned for having a just society. We are renowned for it. And yet in the post office scandal and in the situation that you've seen with HMO rooms, justice seemed to be the furthest thing away. And the people who had that power, not only did they ignore the small citizen, actually they kept on stacking the deck higher and higher against those individuals. Wendy, what's your advice for the citizens, the people who are involved still in fighting wrongful council tax decisions on their HMOs? What's your advice to those individuals in the light of what's happened with the post office scandal?
Well, I personally would like to see more local representation for people. I think having an MP is fine, but a lot of our MPs are incredibly busy because of the encroachment of the state. I think MPs would be able to deal with some of these injustices much more effectively if they didn't have 1,000 things that they had to keep an eye on all the time. And I think they would be much more effective as local advocates for those individuals where they can make a difference. You know, our MPs are in the seat of power. They can take issues up to the House of Commons and advocate for changes in the law or for scrutiny of the law. And we know that a lot of that just simply doesn't happen because MPs are too busy doing other things which many of us might consider to be irrelevant. I think you have to, though, if you're facing something like this, you've got to find other people who are having the same problem or have had the same problem. I think there is massive power from people power. When we think about the Magna Carta, for example, 1,000 over 1,000 years ago now, when the barons went to King John and said, the way that you are running this country is unfair, discriminatory. I don't think they used exactly that language at the time, but they challenged him and said, you know, from now on, we want to have a written, effectively, it's like a written constitution as to how the king and the state should relate. And we want to see certain key tenets, key principles being outlined. One of them is no taxation without representation. And for me, that's absolutely key to the whole council tax situation, that we're taxed to me, where's the representation? We pay our taxes, so where's our representation? And that goes back to the Magna Carta, no taxation without representation. But we don't have representation. There is a very, very big challenge here to those who are in control of our state to say, where is our representation? Nowadays, I think that form of people power comes in Facebook groups, LinkedIn groups, local networking groups, organizations, charities, advocacy centers, places where people can find some more information about other people who are going through this. And I think ultimately it has to be people power. That has not changed. In 1,000 years of history, what do we see makes the biggest impact? As Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, once famously said, that citizens who bandy together can change the world. And indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. In other words, that it's banding together of people who, as a group, challenge the process, as a group come together and make their case to the powers that be. That's exactly how the tipping point occurred with the post office scandal. You had Alan Bates and his team of other sub-postmasters and mistresses who bandied together, who made their voices heard, who simply persisted month after month, year after year, in making their case to the powers that be until somebody listened. And with journalistic interest and with, you know, the ability of writers and creative people to come on board, of course, we saw the drama over Christmas time, which was very, very powerful. But there have been programs going back many, many years. In fact, I've been listening to the Post Office Scandal podcast from years ago. I saw the Panorama program in 2015. I've been watching this scandal, this abhorrent miscarriage of justice unfold over many, many years. And of course, it does parallel what we're going through, although many people might think that ours is smaller. Well, it is at the moment, but let's see how that snowball grows, because we do know many, many people have been affected by this and, as you rightly say, are continuing to be affected because the backdated issue of council tax has not yet been resolved. So just as in the post office case, they have not yet had their full compensation for all the injustices that they have suffered, many of whom received a criminal conviction for, you know, apparently wrongful accounting or theft, which, you know, those accusations and those convictions have been overturned, but they still haven't had compensation for that. In the same way, we've got situations where landlords have paid out council tax, which really, arguably, the tenants should have paid. But in order to help the tenants, in order to appease the tenants, in order to be able to uphold their AST agreement, whereby they agree to pay the council tax, they have paid the council tax. The council tax has been paid. Are they now going to get a refund? There are still lots of loose ends to tie up. So this is why I see that these two, to me, they are both miscarriages of justice. They're both wrong. They both need putting right. And it's a case of the ordinary mortal person clubbing together with other ordinary people and fighting.
Thanks, Wendy. I know that you're going to keep up the fight for some of those smaller issues that are still needing to be sorted out on the council tax front.
Thank you, Andy. I hope you have enjoyed this little rant from me about why the post office scandal has similarities to our council tax and HMO fight. If this matter has affected you, please do look for us on Facebook. We are the Council Tax and HMO group, and we would love you to join us. There's lots of information on our page about how to fight the system, how to deal with your tenants, who to contact for extra support and advice. And you will find a group of people there who have massive sympathy if this is what you're going through, whether you are a landlord or a tenant. We can provide you with resources, and we can certainly provide you with energy and determination to right your wrongs. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening. So we have just finished a very fruitful day, HMO Council Tax Reform Group. And I've got the guys with me. Just really wanted to give you all a bit of an update of
that we're still together, we're still working together, things are still happening, and just really get some feedback from Neil. How did you find today and what are you excited about the next few months?
I think the agenda's really packed and I'm really looking forward to what we have in store and for the future. I think watch this space. I think there's a lot to achieve and I think we're all the right team to achieve it. It's going to be really good fun.
Great. Thank you. And Darren, what about you? What did you get out today? What are you looking forward to in the next 6 months? Where do you see us going as an HMO reform group?
So I think there's some really good things coming up. Great to work with you guys as usual. Excited about the times ahead. And there's obviously some technicalities we need to tidy up. But let's get those tidied up and then see where we go as a group and whether we can make it something bigger and better.
Matt, you did a brilliant job today as our scribe, taking notes and putting them on the whiteboard. What are you going away with today, thinking about and kind of excited about for the next few months?
Well, the first thing was great to get in the same room as everyone after the new year and after our epic win of getting the HMOs branded as one dwelling from the 1st of December 2023. So I think going away from today, I'm excited that we're all still wanting to work together to represent both landlords and tenants in HMOs. I think it's very important to be a group which looks at both sides of the fence and also the plans that we've got to help HMO landlords over, you know, from 2024 and beyond. As Darren said, there's a few loose ends to tidy up with the council tax, but there's a lot more that we can do to really benefit this industry and those in it.
Finally, Alan, let me come to you. It's been great to have you here today. Busy guy, tribunals, speaking, doing lots of different things. What would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to say, first of all, thank you. And it's been a great opportunity to meet and catch up with everybody face to face and direct in light of the recent achievements. But also, we have not forgotten the continuing plight of a great many people who are still caught in various aspects of the systems, who are still suffering from injustice. And it's been inspiring because it's clear that there is still a fight to follow. It is not enough just simply to observe it. We do actually actively and thoroughly intend to do something to get a measure of redress and justice and satisfaction for some of the people who've been victims of this for far too long.
Fighting talk there from Alan Murdy. Just really rounding up a few comments from the HMO Council Tax Reform Group. As you can probably tell, we are actually standing here in a shopping centre in Shepherd's Bush recording this because we suddenly realised we should do it on our way out. Anyway, I wanted to just give you a very quick update and thank you once again for listening.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.